Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me in the studio right now is Dr. Latika Gupta. She is the Assistant Professor of Economics at Michigan Tech. Latika, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Rick. It's great to be back here.
And we'll be talking because, you know, you've recently did a lecture that was, you know, people in the public were welcome to come to, and I thought it was a very interesting topic, and I thought I'd steal you and have you come talk about that same topic here on Copper Country Today. The title of your lecture was Borrowing, Bernanke, and Beyond, the Whys, Whodunits, and What's Next, referring to the financial crisis, oftentimes called the Great Recession, that we experienced about 10 years ago. And, you know, I'm interested to find out what sort of led up to that financial crisis, what were the causes, and what was the impact on people. I personally was impacted. I can talk about that as well. And then also what we learned, you know, trying to come out of that so that, you know, we can hopefully minimize, you know, that kind of a effect later on. Maybe avoid it, which probably is going to be impossible to do, but maybe we can at least adopt a few different strategies, if not as a nation personally, so that you don't get as affected by it. So let's go ahead and start with a little bit travel back in time. Take me to just prior to 2008 and what the markets in the country were like and worldwide, because I know things were booming at the time.
I'm glad you enjoyed the lecture, Rick. The seeds for the Great Recession were really sown in the early 2000s when the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates multiple times during the early 2000s. And that low interest rate made credit really cheap and easily available. In addition to that, the investment banks, combined with government agencies like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, created these new financial instruments called mortgage-based securities. And these made investments into securities like mortgage-based securities really attractive for investors that were not really aware of how risky these investments were. But at the same time, homeowners were able to get credit very easily and cheaply. So on one hand, you had people who were able to get credit at a very cheap rate. Let's say somebody who was sitting in China, who was able to lend their money, who was able to put money in a pension fund, who were not aware of how risky their investment was. And they were putting all of their money into a pension fund. And on the other hand, you had somebody, let's say, sitting in Houghton and putting money into a bank account. Somebody who was putting, getting a mortgage from a mortgage broker. And there were several entities in between, for example, a mortgage broker and several financial institutions, whether it was an investment bank or whether it was a pension fund. And so you have all these entities connecting those, that ultimate buyer and ultimate lender. And there was really no incentive for either the buyer or the lender to think about the risk involved. And the securities that were involved in these were so risky, they were so complicated, that even the financial institutions didn't really know what they were doing. Hmm.
So this is often referred to as the housing bubble, because I remember that term being thrown around there after everything kind of fell apart. And interesting is in that particular time frame is that's when I had became a homeowner for the first time. And so when, you know, they were talking about predatory lenders and other terms that were now being tossed around, and people said, well, it's not in a bank's best interest to lend money to somebody who can't pay it back, and so that would be silly for them to do that. No, actually, we were in a position, speaking of my wife and I, where we hadn't built, really much credit of anything. We had never been homeowners before. Mm-hmm. Housing, we were living in an area where housing was very expensive. The house that we ended up buying was $150,000. There was paperwork that when presented to us, it was presented in a way of, you know, sign here, just don't look at this. And we were actually told, the lenders said, don't look at this paper because it'll just give you nightmares. Uh-huh. Well, what the paper does is explain that we were, you know, on the hook for $400,000 paying back after uh-huh. interest rates and stuff. And it wasn't just some, you know, crazy, you know, financing company we never heard of. We were financed through Wells Fargo. Uh-huh. And then, of course, you know, looking at and not realizing what we were getting into mm-hmm. at the time, and we take the responsibility for that, was this 80-20 package where there was this giant balloon payment mm-hmm. that was going to be due relatively soon that we were, again, we were told, don't worry about that because all you got to do is make your payments for the first year, then refinance that part, and you won't have to worry about paying that. Well, none of that ever actually happened. We ended up in a whole lot of trouble financially, and we were one of those, you know, millions of people who ended up losing, you know, a home that we had no business probably buying in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I actually, one of the terms that I used during the lecture was layered irresponsibility, and I did not come up with that term. It was actually a term that I saw in The Economist magazine, which actually is one of my favorite terms that I've come across during the Great Recession. It is a combination, I think, you know, it's a combination of blame that you can put on a lot of different entities. And, you know, yeah, mortgage brokers are one of them. They didn't really care about who they were giving loans to. All they cared about was commission. And the term that I have come across is ninja loans, which is no income, no job, no asset loans. So they were giving out loans to people who, and not necessarily yourself because you do have a job, but you know, and you probably do have assets as well.
Well, at the time, I showed no proof that I would be able to pay that loan back. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was excited. We were about to become yeah. homeowners. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we were very starry-eyed going into mm-hmm. the thing, going, wow, you know, after being renters for mm-hmm. so long that somebody, you know, this is the true story. I was sitting in a bar, mm-hmm. actually working in a bar, and somebody was sitting at the bar saying that, he's having trouble finding, you know, enough people to buy the homes he's got available. Mm-hmm. And I was there and said, well, I'd buy a home if I could get the financing. He goes, well, I can get you the financing. You just got to pick out the house.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, they didn't really worry about verifying any of those details. No income, no job, no asset loans, the ninja loans. Those ninja loans were given out very easily. And mortgage brokers didn't really care about who they were giving the loans to because they were just simply passing on the risk to the financial institutions, to the investment banks, who were then passing on the risk to a different financial institution, and then they were just selling those off to other types of institutions and bundling those off into something a little bit more risky.
Yeah. Now, that's the part where I think people start to lose their understanding of it. The average person is when it starts getting into the markets and, mm-hmm. and then you have, you know, you mentioned Bernanke in your title here mm-hmm. and then, you know, everybody knows about the Madoff scandal, mm-hmm. you know, Bernie, mm-hmm. and what was going on sort of on the large global scale that would cause, mm-hmm. you know, it all to come crashing down. So mm-hmm. what was the tipping point that started the downturn?
Well, you know, we reached a point where there was ultimately, you know, ultimately too much supply and too little demand for houses. You know, people started failing on their payments. You know, you have all these people who bought these houses and were unable to make their payments, and some people really shouldn't have bought those houses in the first place, or those houses were too big for them, they were too expensive for them, and they really shouldn't have bought those houses in the first place. They were unable to make those payments. And when people were unable to make those payments, investment banks were not receiving the money, and some of those houses started going up on the market. They started getting foreclosed, and pretty soon we started seeing foreclosure rates go up. And as foreclosure rates started going up, we started seeing more and more houses getting put up for sale. So banks started seizing up those markets, those houses, and we start seeing foreclosure rates go up. And we just towards the end of 2007, we start seeing foreclosure rates go up as new, more and more houses are getting seized. And in 2007, 2008, that just ends up bursting that bubble. And you start seeing financial institutions like Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, failing. Also government-based agencies like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which were created for promotion of home ownership, started failing as well. AIG, which is an insurance company, which was essentially created which essentially failed primarily because they were insuring credit default swaps. That was one of the reasons why AIG failed, and there were a large number of commercial bank failures as well.
How close did we get to a huge global economic disaster? We had a recession, but how close did we get to, you know, seeing something that was in a magnitude we could never imagine?
We saw a lot of other countries fail as well. A number of other countries also started experiencing economic crisis. We live in a globalized world. A number of other countries had also purchased experienced similar crises. They also had experienced similar bubbles. In Europe, especially, we actually experienced more of a debt crisis. For example, countries like Greece and Cyprus actually had a government debt crisis. So that was a little bit more different. In that particular case, Greece was actually cooking up their books. So that's a pretty interesting story. They were actually cooking up their books. But, in that particular case, they actually had to bail out the Greek government because otherwise the entire euro would have crashed. Iceland was one of the few countries that actually went through a depression. In Europe, we had pigs, pigs spelled with a triple I. So that's sort of a derogatory term that's used for Portugal, Iceland, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. So those were the countries that were going through a major economic crisis. But, you know, even in countries like the United Kingdom, there had to be austerity measures because those countries were going through a pretty bad crisis as well.
I know it was hitting home here as well. My had relatives who had built a 401k through work, and of course that's an investment type of retirement plan. Mm-hmm. And my aunt had said that she had to stop looking, mm-hmm. At the investments after about $50,000 had gone, from their investments. She said she had to just stop looking and walk away from it. Mm-hmm. Now, in time, because they actually are still working towards retirement. Of course, things have rebounded, but it was a time of great concern for, even a lot of just regular working people who did not buy, mm-hmm. Who had bought a house and were making their payments and were working and everything mm-hmm. was going fine. It was affecting everybody, people getting laid off from jobs that they had counted on, losing their retirement altogether. Certainly, if you worked in certain industries, you were hit harder than others.